Well, the opioid epidemic has affected tens of thousands of people in Massachusetts, not just those with addiction, but their families as well. Author-illustrator Jarrett Krasoska knows this firsthand. He was raised by his grandparents, as his mother was not able to care for him because of her opioid addiction. Krasoska is known for his humorous children's books, such as The Lunch Lady graphic novel series, but his latest book is different. He's telling his own story of growing up in the graphic memoir that's titled Hey Kiddo. He joins us from New England Public Radio in Springfield. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jarrett.
Thank you for having me, Deborah. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Why was now the right time for you to come out with this book?
It's not a matter of this being the right time so much as a number of years of my building up the courage to write this book. I first started thinking about writing this book in the very early 2000s. I had just received my first book contract for a picture book called Goodnight Monkey Boy to be published. And, you know, for some time I thought, okay, this is the happy ending for this kid who he loves to draw, and his mother loved to draw as well, but she was addicted to heroin and was incarcerated throughout his childhood. But then every time I sat down to write about my own life, I would hesitate because I would worry about what people would think, you know, what people in the book would think of how I was portraying the situations. And over the years, I continued to write books, like you mentioned, the Lunch Lady books. Mm-hmm. And I gave a TED Talk in 2012, and it was quite by accident. The TEDx Talks over here in Hampshire College, they had a cancellation. And they called me that afternoon to see if I could fill in for that night. Mm-hmm. And it was a very last minute thing. And I at that TED Talk, I talked about my mother's heroin addiction. And that talk went viral. And after that, when I would visit schools, I would meet young people that had a similar situation. I mean, it wouldn't matter where I was. And I visit schools all across the country to talk about my books and encourage writing, encourage reading, encourage creativity. And it wouldn't matter if I was a private school at a public school or if this school was in a suburban or urban or rural setting. Every single place I went to, I met a young person who was dealing with a similar plate of issues. And, you know, when you have a fifth grader come up to you and say to you, I'm just like you, and they're not talking about their love of comics or loving to draw. They're talking about their mother's heroin addiction.
Oh my gosh.
There's a switch that went off in me that said, this is the book that I need to write. I feel the responsibility to share this story. I have an audience. I have a very unique way to tell the story. I have a platform. So I took the leap, and here I am.
Mm. And how do you think you approach this differently from your other work? This it's darker, obviously, very personal. It must have been very different for you, or wasn't it?
It wasn't. You know, I had to have the courage to write it openly and honestly. So, you know, I'm known as the Lunch Lady guy for writing these funny, campy, you know, fun stories that are humorous and all, but this is a much heavier story. So I did have to stick my neck out there to write this book for older readers. But in regards to the process, you know, I'm still creating a graphic novel, or in this case, a graphic memoir. You're trying to find the right balance between words and pictures. You're trying to figure out what the motivations are for the characters. And you're trying to figure out the story structure and the beats. So the only difference here is instead of just relying on my limitless imagination, I now am dealing with real people in real situations. So I did a lot of research and having conversations with family members that are still here, reading old family letters, looking at old family photos, and really trying to read behind the glances people are giving one another. It was very labor intensive, but so very worth it to have the story out there.
Mm. And a lot of it in Worcester. Right, in Worcester?
All of it in Worcester, yeah. No, I grew up in Worcester, and Worcester is like another character in this book.
Right.
I drove around the city to take photos. I walked the same path that I would walk every day to Gates Lane School. Some structures are no longer standing, like the first version of Gates Lane School that I attended, so I worked with the Worcester Historical Museum. And the book opens with a beautiful spread of Coney Island, one of the most, I know you were just talking about the city Sitco sign. That's, you know, we have Coney Island hot dogs in Worcester. That's our Sitco sign.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about your story. Your grandparents took you in when you were a child. They were becoming empty nesters. They had raised five children of their own. In the book, you show them watching soap operas, smoking cigarettes, hard workers, and very clear that they loved you very, very much. But your mom was sort of missing, and you didn't understand why. They told you when you were about, 9 years old?
Yes.
And so do you think, looking back on it, that was the right way to do it?
You know, it's the way they knew how. I do think I was probably emotionally ready for it. Mm. You know, we never know when the right time is to tell a child a difficult truth. But children will, you know, given the opportunity, will always surprise us in their ability to handle difficult information. Mm. And, you know, they were also of the generation where you just didn't talk about your problems. You know, they grew up in the Great Depression and served during World War II. You know, and they were just, you know, you keep things inside. You don't talk to people about things and you just move on. Mm. So definitely a different philosophy on how to deal with those issues. You know, fortunately, I had my sketchbooks to process all of this information.
Right. Is that what did it? I mean, you know, how did it change your perspective? And then what, you know, that was my question next. What did you do to sort of process all of that?
You know, I one of the best resources I had in writing this book were all of my sketchbooks that I kept as a teenager. I kept every single sketchbook. And I used that sketchbook as a place to just, you know, get this angst out of my head and onto the paper. So I had that outlet. You know, every young person, they need some sort of outlet to deal with their stuff, whatever that stuff is. And I say this at the end of the book, and you know, there's this thing that there's an expression that people say that books can save lives, and I also think empty sketchbooks can save lives because, you know, you need to have someone listen to you, and sometimes, you know, your way of speaking is through marks on a page.
Hmm. What do you think of the coverage, the media messages and other messages about the opioid epidemic and how they affect children whose parents are addicted?
You know, I wonder about that because, for me, I thought I was the only person in my city, in my school that was dealing with this. Of course, I would learn later that some of my classmates also had parents who were incarcerated and certainly some had parents who had addictions. Perhaps it's making kids feel less alone. I mean, When I was growing up, we had Nancy Reagan saying, just say no. We had all of those, you know, what now I would consider those iconic PSAs, like the eggs frying on a frying pan and I learned it from watching you PSA. And, you know, those weren't always to the point. So I'm hoping that, you know, the messages that are getting out there for kids are more to the point and specific to help them choose the right path.
Do you think, though, I just wonder where the line is between informing kids and maybe further stigmatizing something that kids may often feel, you know, very ashamed of?
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I hope that this book could help them see past their current set of circumstances. And, you know, I am seeing more. You know, some actors and some Broadway performers starting to share their stories of having been raised by grandparents because of a generation that was taken away from drug use. So, you know, I hope that more adults like me can share their stories so that young people can know that there's life beyond all of this.
How did your relationship with your mother evolve as you became an adult and then a parent?
Well, the interesting thing about becoming a parent is then suddenly all of the adults from your childhood are human beings, right? And, you know, I grew to have more empathy for her because as a young person, as a teenager, I really had that mentality of, oh, she chose drugs over me. And, you know, as time marched on, I came to the realization that, you know, while she did at one point in her life choose that first time, but when she made that decision, she was no longer making the choice. That drug held on to her to the very, very end of her life. You know, I wish that she was able to be clean and sober. I wish she was able to have been a grandmother to my kids because she would have been a really fun and quirky grandmother. But she did not have the whereabouts to do that. Mm-hmm.
And we should say your dad, he wasn't around for most of your childhood. You did hear from him randomly one day in a letter that he sent apologizing for his absence, right?
Yes. No, he He got in touch with me just before I graduated high school. And then for the longest time, you know, for some months, I just didn't write back until I had the thought in the back of my head that perhaps he went on to have other kids. And if I did have a brother or sister out there, I'd like to be a part of their lives. So, you know, I eventually did write him back. And spoiler alert if you haven't read the book yet, but he and my brother and sister are still in my lives now.
Oh, yeah.
We're in each other's lives now, yeah.
So if you had a message for kids who may be in a similar situation, which you say is a big part of why you wrote this book, but also for the family members who may be taking over because of the opioid epidemic, what would your messages to those two groups be? Or maybe there's just one message, but whichever.
Well, you know, and I'm lucky enough to be able to address those families directly. So I'm always in schools, as I mentioned, but I've also talked to the Massachusetts Commission for Grandparents Raising Grandchildren quite a bit, and had an event last year with First Lady Lori Baker, and she is doing a lot of good work working with that population. And what I say to the grandparents is that I'm sure it's very difficult for them. In that, you know, as a parent now, I understand that all you want is for your kid to be able to take care of themselves and be successful after you're gone. And my grandparents, you know, they had that feeling too, but they also knew their time was more imminent. And I knew as their grandson that I wouldn't have them well into their adult lives. But the work that they're doing is important, and it will send positive ripples out through the rest of their grandkids' life. And, you know, that grandkid will forever remember them, be forever grateful. And when I talk to young people, I talk about the fact that we all have special talents and we all have different kinds of intelligences, and the kind of intelligence that you can't always get tested on. And so I had art, you might have music, you might have really good interpersonal skills. Whatever that skill, whatever that intelligence is, embrace that, and that is your ticket into adulthood.
All right, author, illustrator Jared Krososka. His new graphic memoir is Hey Kiddo. Jared, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, the Russo's market worker whose singing went viral and led to him studying at Berkeley. He visits our studio to sing. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.